is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The number of unaccompanied minors showing up at the southern border has tripled in the last 2 weeks. It's now reached more than 3,200 children. They've been allowed to enter the country, but the U.S. is running out of facilities to house them. It's a difficult situation for migrants along the U.S. border with Mexico. It's also putting the Biden administration in a difficult situation politically. Joining me now to talk about this is Jacob Soboroff. He's a correspondent with MSNBC and NBC News. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. Jacob, welcome back to 1A.
It's good to be with you, Jen. Thanks.
We did reach out to the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection for this show. They did not respond to our request for guests, but the invitation still stands. Jacob, you were at the southern border recently. Where exactly were you and what's happening there right now?
I was at Tijuana, so, you know, just over the border from San Diego. And what I saw there, quite frankly, runs very counter to the narrative that we're hearing from mostly Republican politicians and right-wing media, quite frankly, which is that the Biden administration has some kind of wholesale open border policy. I think, you know, your introduction was perfect. There is an increase in unaccompanied migrant children who are being let into the country by the Biden administration. This is part of what they call their humane approach to reversing Trump administration policies that kept virtually everyone out of the country under what's called Title 42. And that's a public health regulation meant ostensibly to stop the spread of coronavirus in the United States. Now, public health experts, Physicians for Human Rights, Columbia University, I mean, they've all said that it's not necessary to stop the spread of COVID. But nevertheless, the Trump administration used it, and the Biden administration has kept it in place for everyone but unaccompanied children. And there is an overcrowded overflow situation at the border in some of these detention facilities and the shelters meant for kids with regard to housing them. But everyone else is still, for the most part, being kept out of the country. And that is what I saw at the port of entry on the Mexican side in Tijuana. Haitians who have been waiting for 1 or 2 years, migrants from African countries who have been trying to get in, even Central Americans that are parts of families and single adults at this point have no option to get into the United States. And that was, I think, the message from the White House yesterday as well. Ambassador Roberta Jacobson said the borders are closed. And for everyone but children at this point, you know, as a reporter, that's what I'm seeing with my own eyes.
Well, Jacobson also announced that the administration is taking new measures to address root causes of migration. Let's listen.
The president has committed to seeking $4 billion over 4 years to address the root causes of migration, including corruption, violence, and economic devastation exacerbated by climate change. As part of that plan, we will address the causes that compel individuals to migrate, including improving governance and providing a foundation for investment and economic opportunity, strengthening civilian security and the rule of law. Working across the whole of government, we will look at access to international protection and refugee resettlement, and rethinking asylum processing to ensure fair and faster consideration. Only by addressing those root causes can we break the cycle of desperation and provide hope for families who clearly would prefer to stay in their countries and provide a better future for their children.
Now, Jacob, Republican critics say the Biden administration's immigration policies are attracting asylum seekers to the U.S. What do we know about what's driving this current surge of migrants and asylum seekers?
You know, I've been to some of the places that Ambassador Jacobson was talking about when she, you know, when she speaks about the push, so-called push factors of people coming to the United States. And, you know, the reason I think at this point that you see an overcrowded situation on both sides of the border, people trying to get in to declare asylum and international right and not being able to do so, and children in border patrol stations, effectively jails. This is, and I should be really clear, this is not a place for any child, especially children traveling alone. The idea is to get them into those shelters as quickly as possible. There just isn't the capacity at this point. They don't have enough shelters. They can't move children from the border patrol stations. The reason that they're coming here I do not think it is possible to single out Biden administration policy. They were coming in nearly the same numbers at points during the Trump administration when they had some of the most aggressive deterrence-based policies, including in the wake of family separations, which, you know, Physicians for Human Rights that I mentioned before deemed torture. The American Academy of Pediatrics called it government-sanctioned child abuse. What you see when you go to Central America, in places like Chiquimula and Zacapa in Guatemala, where I've been, is acute poverty, starvation, malnutrition, climate change, and climate variability-induced instability in the region, on top of violence and corruption that you hear about from the White House today. And without without addressing that, without addressing the deterrence-based approach of scaring people away from the country, you know, nothing is going to change. We've tried in this country over decades, whether it was Bill Clinton in 1993, prevention through deterrence, or George Bush, you know, creating DHS and exponentially increasing the size of the Border Patrol, or Barack Obama deporting more people than ever before. It just hasn't stopped. Donald Trump, by the way, you know, supersizing all these policies with family separation. It doesn't stop people from coming who are looking to seek a better life and literally have no other option than to leave their homes. And so I think we're starting to hear from the Biden administration, although it's very early days, signals of a different approach to stemming migration.
We got this email from Danny who asks, is it time for the U.S. to develop a policy similar to Kennedy's Alliance for Progress to tackle the structural causes of migration at the southern border? Your thoughts?
Yeah, based on what I've seen, I mean, remember, Donald Trump, President Trump, defunded aid to Central American countries that would mitigate the effects, in particular, of climate change, climate variability, food insecurity, et cetera. The World Food Program today says that over 2018, they're now seeing a doubling in surveys of people from Central America who say they are going to migrate. But when, as I have, you talk to people in these regions and say, you know, do you want to come? Almost everyone says no. You know, they don't want to, who would want to leave their home and their family to take one of the most dangerous journeys on planet Earth through Mexico, having to avoid cartels, pay smugglers, if you don't have to? And so, yeah, the answer is cooperation with these countries, ways to mitigate the reasons people are leaving, would be an approach like that, would be an approach that would be a significant departure from bipartisan decades of deterrence and punitive-based immigration policy, the whole goal of which is to scare people away, in the Trump era, terrorize them away from coming to the United States.
How is the Biden administration communicating with people who may be considering trying to come into the U.S.? Are they trying to warn people away right now?
I mean, you heard Ambassador Jacobson yesterday at the White House podium in both Spanish and English say very clearly the border is closed. And I think that is as clear of a message as they could possibly send. There is a perception, and certainly smugglers will exploit the perception, that a more humane approach to immigration by the Biden administration, as has been stated, means open borders. It just doesn't match the reality. And I think that's where, you know, their rhetoric, they have a balancing act to do here, which is to explain that for them, more humane means not systematically separating thousands of parents and children for no other reason than to deter other migration. You know, the Biden administration is not making migrants wait in the MPP program, the Remain in Mexico program, in some of Mexico's most violent cities, intentionally for deterrence-based purposes. The border is still closed. And so it is a fine line for the Biden administration to walk here, to say we're trying to do a departure from the Trump administration's harsh tactics. But at the same time, we're not here to welcome everybody, at least not, you know, on day 50, 51, 52 of this administration.
Let's talk about the children who are coming in to the country. They're supposed to be released from detention after 72 hours. Is that happening, and where are they going?
No, it's not happening, and it's a big problem, and it's a big challenge. You want to call it a crisis, you want to call it a challenge. You know, you can pick your language, but the Border Patrol stations along the southwest border, excuse me, are no place for a child. When I went to the McAllen Border Patrol Central Processing Station at the height of separations, what I saw is what I described to the to our audience on NBC and to the world. Children sleeping on concrete floors under Mylar blankets, in certain cases supervised by security contractors in a watchtower with very little child welfare professional presence on the ground. That facility in particular has been closed. It was closed during the Trump administration to remove the cages. But facilities like it, those barren, stark, grim facilities still exist. And until there's more capacity at the shelters, the health and human services shelters, where children are meant to be transferred out of Border Patrol custody by law within 72 hours, so they can see a doctor, so they can see, you know, social workers, so they can go and go to school, get education. I mean, do things literally like get a haircut, get a fresh change of clothes. Until there is more capacity on that end, children will be stuck, and you are going to see a continuation of a buildup in these Border Patrol stations, which is, you know, in some measure, a humanitarian crisis or challenge, because no child should be in that position, period.
We're discussing a surge of refugees and asylum seekers at the southern U.S. border, including a growing number of unaccompanied minors. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for 1A and the following message come from The Jab, a new podcast from The Economist. How well will COVID-19 vaccines work, and what do they mean for life going forward? What are vaccine passports, and will you need one? Find the answers in The Jab. Each week, The Economist science correspondent Alok Jha and their health policy editor Natasha Loader unpack a different theme and talk through the race between infections and injections. Subscribe and listen to The Jab for free today on Apple Podcasts, Acast, or your podcast app.
On NPR's Consider This podcast, we help you make sense of one big story in the news every day, like how to combat disinformation and conspiracy theories, which pose a real threat to democracy, and what life looks like after you're vaccinated, the next phase of do's and don'ts. All that in 15 minutes every weekday. Listen now to Consider This from NPR.
Let's get back to our discussion about what's happening along the U.S. southern border. You know, the Biden administration says it's undoing the mess it was left. That's how they're framing it. How fair is that assessment?
I think that it's fair. I think that it's fair in one respect, that this is the way that things have been done for a long time. I actually don't think it's fair to say they're undoing solely the Trump administration's immigration enforcement system. Donald Trump was able to separate children from their parents in a way no other president had ever done before. Quickly and on a massive scale, because the infrastructure was already in place. You know, I went sort of through the last 30 plus years of deterrence-based immigration policy. But just to drill down on a little bit further, the idea of the prevention through deterrence policy under Bill Clinton, which basically has been the guiding force of border policy ever since, was to scare people into either not coming or taking more dangerous or deadly journeys to this country through the desert. And that's when you saw the first wave of border infrastructure, walls or fences, put up in this country under a Democratic president. And so as administrations changed, it was really only a doubling down of that type of policy along the border, deterrence. And so now the Biden administration has signaled they'd like to depart from deterrence-based enforcement. But that is not something that's going to happen in the first 100 days of the Biden presidency. It may not happen within the first 2 years or even the first term of a Biden presidency, especially with a, you know, divided Congress that sees immigration, I think, as more of a political issue than anything else, rather than a humanitarian issue, that when you go see it for yourself, it truly is.
I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Helen Perry is the Executive Director of Global Response Management. That's a nonprofit organization that provided health services in the Matamoros refugee camp in Mexico. That's before immigration officials closed it last week. Helen, it's great to have you back.
Thanks so much.
So former President Trump sealed the border to asylum seekers, citing the pandemic. His Remain in Mexico policy also left many asylum seekers stuck on the Mexican side of the border in the Matamoros refugee camp. And you say there's still a need for that camp. Why did officials close it?
So I think the optics of having a refugee camp at the U.S.-Mexico border has been highly controversial for both governments, both the U.S. government and the Mexico government. The reality of the situation is that there is not an infrastructure in Matamoros that exists like in other border cities, like Tijuana and Juarez, for example. In Matamoros, we have about 150 to 200 shelter beds total. There is a severe lack of infrastructure for facilitating non-food items, food distributions, legal support. And Matamoros is an incredibly dangerous city. So dangerous, in fact, that UNHCR and IOM actually don't have their staff base out of Matamoros. They base out of Monterrey. And so because of this lack of infrastructure, in many ways, now that the camp has closed, we are back to day one of 2019, where we're seeing families living on the streets because there's just nowhere for them to go.
Was there pressure from the Biden administration to close the camp?
You know, I'm not sure what the discussions were at that level. I can tell you that they definitely weren't fans of it, right? Because who really wants to say that a refugee camp is a good thing, right? But I think it's important to point out that everyone who was living there was doing so by choice. They chose to live there because in their view of the situation, that was the safer alternative as opposed to trying to integrate into the city or find places to live, or maybe they just didn't have the resources to find places to live. And now that the camp is closed, you know, we're seeing between 50 to 100 new arrivals a day. Many of them, so far of the ones that we're tracking, over 90% of them are reporting that they're living on the streets.
When you think about closing the camp and having this place that's a point of contact for refugees, for aid workers who may be trying to provide assistance, what's lost now that that camp is shut down?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, you know, everybody kind of forgets that, like, refugee camps exist for a reason, right? There's a reason that people with similar needs all come together in one space that they sort of band together. Now that that camp is not there, the ability for us to get resources out into the city and to find these individuals and keep track of them becomes infinitely more difficult. And we have concerns about how those individuals are going to be targeted by human trafficking, by organized crime entities. You know, Matamoros is back to having open street fighting, which we saw as recently as January of this year. Kidnappings are on the rise. Extortion is on the rise. And now that we don't have a centralized location, it's that much harder to keep track of new arrivals, of people wanting to apply for asylum.
We got this email from Margaret who says, if we're serious about helping the situation in Central America and finding root causes of migration, we need to look at the insatiable American appetite for illicit drugs, which support the cartels. Jacob, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, I want to remind everyone that oftentimes drugs coming into the United States, especially under the Trump administration, were used as justification for harsher deterrence-based policies. Building of the wall, President Trump would often say that people who were sneaking in to declare asylum, including families, may have been fraudulent and, you know, part of a drug smuggling operation. You know, what I think is important for everyone to understand is another thing, as a journalist, I've seen with my own eyes, the vast majority of drugs coming into this nation are brought here through legal ports of entry. They come through places like the San Ysidro Port of Entry, the world's busiest land border crossing in between Tijuana and San Diego, where I was at the beginning of last week. And so the idea that stemming the flow of drugs is something that you can do by punishing asylum seekers is just not based in reality. And I do think it's an issue of dealing with the reasons that there is such a big market for illicit drugs here in the United States. And that is a much more complex, complicated conversation involving poverty, the reasons that people turn to desperation here in the United States, why people struggle and turn to drugs. But it certainly isn't asylum seekers coming to the southwest border.
Well, Republican lawmakers are criticizing the Biden administration's handling of the situation. Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona is urging the DHS secretary to declare a crisis at the border. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is said to be leading a delegation of GOP lawmakers to the border next week. Jacob, you've alluded to this, but there is a political needle Biden is trying to thread here. How does this play out for him?
Well, I think some of the criticism is disingenuous just based in the realities along the border. I think that what a lot of people realized during the Trump administration when they saw the systematic separation of children and placing them in this in the custody of Border Patrol in these harsh conditions, Customs and Border Protection, is how punitive truly the immigration system really is. And, you know, I guess I'm not sure what exactly. I think they're searching in the Republican Party at this point for what exactly their criticism is. Is the crisis that they believe there should be more humane conditions for children along the Southwest border? I think Democrats would certainly agree to that. Is the crisis that any migrants are coming into the country at all? And if that's the case, I mean, there is a clear policy debate to be had. But, you know, just throwing out terms like open borders, which is not based in the reality on the ground at all, you know, I think is reductive and is not going to get anybody anywhere in Washington, D.C., and certainly not help anybody along the border, whether it's border communities and people that live in these communities or the migrants who are trying to enter the country to seek asylum.
Helen, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that we're still in a pandemic. And the last time we talked, cases were surging along the border. How is this complicating this current situation?
Yeah, I mean, COVID-19 has definitely been a challenge. I think the notion that that asylum seekers are somehow the Typhoid Mary that's going to bring it to the community is kind of a farce. It's ironic to me that Governor Abbott had just, you know, simultaneously in almost the same breath, you know, got rid of his mask mandate, but then also said, you know, we can't have asylum seekers processing through because they're going to, you know, bring COVID. So it definitely makes it challenging, but there are ways that you can be respectful of public health measures while simultaneously respecting the right for asylum. And we've been doing that successfully. And I think it's just a matter of increasing the access to resources. You know, right now, you know, anyone crossing from MPP is currently being tested by IOM. If they're positive, they're isolating in Mexico. Tijuana has a great system in place with San Diego to support isolation for individuals, which I think really should be established as the model in this situation. But you can't do that and have those support systems without, you know, federal funding that goes along with it.
We'll continue our discussion of the surge of refugees and asylum seekers at the southern U.S. border in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint, fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy two cases, you'll get a third case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.
Neuroscientist Kimberly Noble wants to know, if a family gets more money,
does it directly impact children's cognitive development?
Ideas about the brain. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
We're discussing the increased number of refugees and asylum seekers at the southern U.S. border. This also includes a growing number of unaccompanied minors. Jacob, you talked about the GOP trying to, I guess, find their political path here. But I wonder, you know, when we think about the ways in which Americans consume media, the arguments around immigration policy can really easily happen in completely separate bubbles with not a lot of shared understanding or information. And then that creates some political hurdles for the Biden administration to overcome. How do they negotiate that piece of this?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's such a great point, and it's frustrating to me as someone who learned a lot about this, having unexpectedly found myself in the middle of, you know, one of the most shameful chapters, I think, in modern American history, which was the separation of children from their parents. I didn't know a lot about what goes on at the border and how immigration policy worked until I saw separations with my own eyes. And, you know, now migrants at the border more than ever are being used as a political talking point for people to go to their corners rather than address what I think has been a bipartisan failure. And wouldn't it be amazing in this country if the Republicans and the Democrats could acknowledge that, that what they have been doing for decades together, united in building a system that tries to push people away, scare people away, hurt people who do attempt to come here to declare asylum in an unauthorized or illegal manner. You know, wouldn't it be amazing if they acknowledged that and said, look, this just hasn't worked. People didn't stop coming under the Trump administration at the height of the separation policy. People didn't stop coming when President Obama was deporting more people than ever. The Border Patrol went under Bush when it was, you know, exponentially increased, didn't stop people from coming. And the list goes on. And there's just no acknowledgement of that in any kind of bipartisan fashion. It's all about scare tactics. It's all about talking about people as an other or as a boogeyman. And honestly, you know, not to be cynical about it, but I don't know where we go from here. I don't see a way that Republicans and Democrats ultimately can agree on this unless they come around to the fact that nothing is going to stop people from coming unless we address why they come in the first place and the fact that the existing system simply hasn't worked under Republicans nor Democrats.
Helen, I'm curious to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard to blame people for failing to be successful in a broken system. And, you know, I think to the administration's point, there is a lot of logic to addressing the root causes behind why individuals come here. You know, I tell people frequently that when I'm talking with families at the border, the vast majority of them are describing to me their situations in which they faced violence, which was the exact same types of violence that we saw from ISIS in the Middle East. And so there's this like perception that somehow, you know, people are just coming here because they're poor or they're impoverished or they're suffering, you know, socioeconomic impacts. The reality is that the majority of these families are fleeing the exact same types of violence. And, you know, we have to create a system in a stepwise approach that addresses the problems that we have with our current system. It needs to address the root causes like violence, like organized crime, economic collapse, you know, political persecution that are happening in Central and South America. And we need to support social support systems in these areas, in these regions, to help people have access to resources. You know, my organization is working throughout Mexico at the northern border and the southern border. We're trying to offer access to equitable life-saving healthcare so that people can survive their journeys because many of them don't. But the infrastructure in those areas is so collapsed from just years and years of neglect that it's hard to offer those types of resources to people even if they do want to stay in their home countries. And so the challenges there are you know, widespread, but I don't think that they're insurmountable. I think that there are unique collaborative approaches that the government could take, you know, integrating with, you know, NGOs, non-government organizations, nonprofits to ensure transparency and you know, humane processing and humane support for these individuals all across the regions and to include in the United States.
Jacob, I wonder if part of the battle here is also the U.S. having a real honest accounting of how our country has contributed to instability in developing nations, whether it's through our contributions to climate change or what have you.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, or instability, you know, through meddling in the politics of Central American nations. You know, I hear that all the time when I talk to people, that's one of the root causes that's often left out. And so, you know, right now, at this minute, I think that there's a two-pronged approach that the Biden administration is looking at. Number one, it's the root causes. But number two, how do you account for what that meddling in foreign affairs, or what our contribution to a you know, global system, a capitalist system, has done to people around the world. And what do you do here today in the United States? I mean, I think we have to bring it back to there are children right now who are in jails, you know, at the southwest border, because that's the system we've used in this country for decades. And so what is the immediate move by American politicians. If there's a crisis, what do Republican politicians want to do with Democrats? Do they want to pass an emergency appropriations bill to build more facilities in a permanent capacity to deal with children in a humane way? Or don't they? I mean, those are not the types of specific conversations that I'm hearing now. And if the goal truly is to alleviate what I hear Republicans saying is a crisis with children backed up in Border Patrol stations, I really haven't heard many step forward in terms of saying, here are the solutions to fix what, yeah, in some measure, the United States of America has wrought, over the course of decades.
Kokomo Kid tweets, it would be great if the U.S. could help fix things in Central American countries rather than breaking them, as has happened for decades. Jacob, one of Biden's first acts was to implement a family separation task force. What has the task force done so far?
Well, it's just getting up and running at the moment. And in fact, you know, with the confirmation of Judge Garland as Attorney General yesterday, it's just added its newest member officially. The idea is to reunite all of the remaining still separated families that were torn apart from one another by the Trump administration, as I've said, in the name of deterrence. There are over 5,500 by the account of the ACLU. The last count of children whose parents had not yet been reached by the government over 3 years since the beginning of the policy was 499. It's a number that's constantly changing. And there's literally door-to-door ground searches going on in Central America by an organization called Justice in Motion in cooperation with non-governmental organizations in the United States. I mean, the short version of it is to repair the damage that has been done, which will be lifelong psychological trauma to both the children and the parents for being taken from one another at the Southwest border. And it is an immense, I mean, I cannot overstate what an immense challenge it truly is, because of how horrendous the record keeping by the Trump administration was when they decided to systematically separate these children from their parents. And this was a deliberate, I mean, you know, I want to state very clearly, this was a deliberate decision by the Trump administration to do this because they believed it would be the thing that stopped people from coming to this country. And they wanted it to be bigger and worse and more separations than ultimately they were able to accomplish before it was stopped by executive order by President Trump. And now the Biden administration is faced with, and you know, under the leadership of Secretary Mayorkas, tracking down and reuniting all the remaining families that have remained separated after all these years.
Helen, we know most of the major surges at the border happen in the summer. The weather's beginning to warm now. What do you anticipate the situation will look like along the southern border in a few months?
Yeah, my concern right now is that with the lack of infrastructure, we're going to start to see, you know, the severe dehydration, you know, exposure. I've got 8-month-old babies sleeping on the streets again because we don't have, you know, the infrastructure and the shelter support to make sure that they have safe places to go. And, you know, I think we're all prepared for the worst case scenario at this point, unless significant support comes in for the international aid that needs to happen. We're going to be right back to where we were in 2018, 2019. Currently, all of the resources that are being provided in Matamoros are provided by private donors very generously. Mm-hmm. But we need significant international funding to support these efforts, or else we're going to see the worst case.
That's Helen Perry, Executive Director of Global Response Management. That's a nonprofit that provided health services in the Matamoros refugee camp in Mexico before immigration officials closed it last week. Also with us, Jacob Soboroff, a correspondent with MSNBC and NBC News. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. Thanks to you both for joining us. Today's producer was James Morrison. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.